That's why we don't put the nice things we do on YouTube. Don't need the world to ban me. I just need you to. That's how it goes, right? So, kids, how are you doing today? I'm doing well. I'm in a space of my own creation, and we're figuring out what the cosmos has in store for us as we progress through it. That's all we can really do. It's all about being human. So I was thinking about things recently, which I am prone to do. I wouldn't recommend it. It's not a great idea. Quick sip of coffee there. There may be edits in this one, because I'm currently still getting over a sore throat, so apologies for that, but we're going to move past it. So, I was thinking recently about a chat which I had with WTF Potts, where we were discussing social media and censorship and all these kinds of things, and stuff which can get you banned from platform to platform, and I got into an absolute rabbit hole of thought about it, and I decided it would probably be good to figure out how do we get to this space in the first place, right? Because how have we got to a space where creators, artists, content, media people, whatever you want to call us, whatever you want to do, don't know what will get them banned on the platforms one to another? Because this is the situation we're actually in, right? We're not in a situation where people get told what they do will get them banned. What they get told is that they may be banned after the fact, and this will have a wider impact on how we as a society get together and put together information and the way in which we do things. Ironically, this whole ambiguity of banning and not banning has led recently to situations where things like street art and graffiti have also come back into play. There was a video recently of a tower block in LA where graffiti people have gone in and they have artistically tagged the entire building, and it looks fantastic. And then I saw another recently where someone had full-on graffiti bombed a whole train in New York. That hasn't been done since like the 80s. And that, again, is fantastic, because it shows where we're at within society. It plays into all of the stuff which we're about to discuss. So I thought we should take some time. Let's take a close look at YouTube, because YouTube is the platform which I'm basically on for this podcast, and probably the one which I use most. So it's our closest relative, and I thought it would take some time to go through and think, right, let's channel the inner Carlin, the inner voice inside my head, and can we define the seven things you can get banned for on YouTube? It's going to get messy. It's going to be a road. It's going to be a journey. So if you want to join me on it, get on board. If not, thanks for watching. You can probably bail out at this point. You may have already gone. You know, I read somewhere recently that, oh, not recently, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, that most people decide whether they're watching a video within the first 30 seconds. I wonder how much of a video gets watched by the robot before they start flagging it for bans. Do you know? I don't know. You know, who knows? What's the point in all of that anyway? So the number one problem, which I find when I think about this topic, is that no one actually tells you when you join a platform, in simple terms, what you can and cannot do on their platform, right? You are given a vague illusion. You are given a terms of service, which would take you hours and hours to read, which is going to limit your accessibility to the platform. It's also a legal document, so you have to be able to understand these legal terms and techniques and all the minutiae in between in order to understand what can and can't be done. But also, a lot of these documents are vague, right? And get changed every day. They get updated. And this week, I received at least 4 or 5 updates from various platforms which I even forgot I was on, saying, hey, we're updating our terms of service. You should know, just so you're aware, we're doing this, we're changing this, which means profanity filters get updated, and you're playing whack-a-mole with content, and you're diving into a deep rabbit hole of just, what is the terms of service? If they've changed since I joined, because platforms were set up for one purpose and then have escalated over time, you know, no one uses MySpace for social media anymore, Vampire Freaks is a clothing store, all of these things modify. So not only if they introduce you to the terms of service, which you may or may not read, do you have that, but it alters. Maybe soon after you even join the platform, it alters, it updates. All of these things come into play. It's like returning home to your office or returning home to your apartment. You have a key for your apartment. You know how to get into that door. You get home, the keyhole has moved, so you have to adjust where you slide your key. And then the next day, you come home, it's a different key. You have to go get a new key. The day after that, they've changed the keyword. They've bypassed security. They've gone, oh, hey, no, we're doing keyword basis now. You need to figure out what it is. How did we become a point where we're having to hack? We're having to physically hack into items we already had access to, right? First day, keyword was sycamore. Next day, it was marshmallow. Next one after that, it's going to be Bill Myers. And after that, it's going to be that you're going to have to exchange marshmallows on top of a mountain with some sort of soothsayer. Man, there's beeping outside the window. Who's a reversing? I think he's stopping. All right, we're back on it. Minor interruption. But you're going to have to sit on top of a mountain, exchange some things to get access to this, to tell him your favorite color is not blue, and, you know, reveal some inner dark secrets about yourself in order to just get access to where you were already living in the first place. Maybe you've been on that platform for years and they adjusted everything. They keep it abstract. But they keep it abstract. They keep it intentionally abstract, I may add. And that is done because then they can bend things, which is not actually dissimilar to what I do, right? I take an artistic concept, something simple, something straight to the point, and then I bend it. Usually it's a one-liner, and this is something which I learned to do while I was getting arts education and whilst I was getting regular education. You take the brief you are given, something simple, one-liner, which says, hey, bake a cake. Okay, so we're going to bake a cake. Well, what does that really mean? How can I adjust that? How can I get something more out of this than just a cake? And then I work on it. I think about it. I do research about it. I muse on it in some manner and some form, and I twist and bend it to create something original, which is more than a cake, and to the untrained viewer will look at said cake and go, huh, well, that's, it's not a cake, this is something else, I'm seeing this. And then they think about it, and they think about it a few more, and then they read the title and they go, oh, it seems so obvious when I have the context. And that's how modern art works. Just as a short review, that's exactly how modern art works. And this is what they do with the terms of service. This is what they do with all the things which they're saying, oh, hey, this is what you can and can't do, and we're going to adjust that, and we're going to bend that to our needs and our financial backers and responsibilities. That is how we're going to approach this. Let me just say something. What is good for artists is bad for institutions. That methodology works great for artists, creators, anything which involves creativity. It is bad for institutions because institutions require rules and structure in order to function day to day and require all of those things to be consistent so people can use them day to day. Write that down. What is good for artists is bad for institutions, and you can quote me on that. Of course, the institutions already knows this, right? This is why tax is incredibly complex, and this is why laws are incredibly complex, and this is why they create these documents which they know you don't read. They know you don't read them because they know you don't have time to read them, because you're too busy out there trying to just live, trying to survive. When you have life, a job, resources you have to gather, children you have to look up for, all these responsibilities which get through your day-to-day life. When you're signing up to a new platform and when you're signing up to a new system, you don't have time to sit and read that. And then even if you did have time to sit and read that, you don't have the education likely to understand what's in that document. So you have to have someone else explain it to you. And they know that. The institutions know that, which keeps access to those things to the people who can afford to spend the time reading them, or, better yet, can pay somebody else to read them to make sure that they're in line with the documentation which they were provided and figure out how to exploit it. And that is classism. We didn't realize we were going to get there talking about profanity, but, you know, this is where we are. I've had a look through the YouTube terms of service. I have. I've sat there and I've reviewed it, and I also went through the frequently asked questions. I also did a quick search of things which may or may not get you banned on YouTube, and, you know, there is a lot of information out there. There's almost too much information out there because a lot of it conflicts. But again, that's intentional. Keep you confused. Now, I think I was able to narrow it down. I got an original four, which I figured out anyway, just based on society, and how other platforms and media work. So I figured out these four terms: death, sex, violence, and drugs. Four things which you can't have on YouTube. Four things which we as a society have deemed inappropriate for the children. Now, I may be inappropriate for the children, but I've never done any of those things on YouTube. I've never sat out and been violent, done drugs, killed anybody, or had sex on YouTube. So that begs the question, will I ever be banned? More on that later. These are the commandments, you will, right? These are the commandments. These are the commandments which rule the platform. But at the same time, they're weirdly abstract. You know, they seem simple. When you look at them, they seem simple. They seem straightforward. They seem to the point. And I don't blame you for thinking that. What I blame is a lot of it's open to interpretation. For instance, let's take sex. You know, let's have sex. Well, sex is abstract, isn't it? Sex as a thing, it's abstract. What is sex? Is it penetrative? Is it non-penetrative? Do you start at the kiss and then work your way up to sex? Or do you class kissing and fondling as part of sex? But also, is sex related to pornography, or is pornography related to sex? What if you're turned on by toasters? Is that sex? If you're watching an unboxing video of a toaster and you start to, you know, get a little aroused, you start to suddenly think, whew, it is warm in here watching this brothel. Bill Hicks once said anything could be pornography, right? The state said it was anything without artistic merit which causes sexual thought. Well, you know, I'm not even sure that holds up anymore, because artistic merit is obviously open to interpretation. Pornography is usually made by production companies these days, and we've all watched good and bad porn. We've all done it, don't deny it. We've all had that moment where a company has failed to produce pornography which appeals to you. So therefore, it's a skill, it takes talent, it takes time, it takes effort, so it therefore has artistic merit. And it causes sexual thoughts. I would say that unboxing videos don't particularly have artistic merit, but do they cause sexual thoughts, right? If that's what cranks your handle, unboxing videos are meant to be, you know, somewhat informative. They're information videos more than anything else. But if that's what gets you going, if that's what makes you hot under the collar, cranks your handle, whatever you want to call it, then that's sex, right? Therefore, do we need to ban it? Or is that just pornography? Does that mean you can have pornography on YouTube, but you can have sex on YouTube? As I say, grey area. We're going to come back to that. We're going to have to come back to that, because already we're one topic in and we're complexifying everything which is happening around it. I mean, you could call it nudity. You know, you could ban nudity. I'm pretty sure nudity is banned on YouTube, or it might be banned on YouTube. But then which nipples get banned? It's a big question on Instagram. Which nipple's bannable? Is it the male nipple? Is it the female nipple? Is it the nipple of an animal? There's a lot of dog nipples on Instagram. Do you ban the dog nipples? Can you report dog nipples? What's the difference between a dog nipple and a non-dog nipple? They both lactate. They both do stuff. Pretty sure I've seen dogs lick other dogs' nipples. Is it only human sexuality we have to ban? Is animal sexuality okay? If I flooded YouTube with videos and Instagram with videos of dogs messing with one another, I don't know why I chose the word messing, but is that a thing? Why is it? It's a whole big to do. We're going to have to move on. Violence. Violence. See, at first, like, all these topics seem simple. Yeah, no, violence on YouTube. Good, logical, sensible, makes a lot of sense, right? But no, sadly no. So does that mean you ban slapstick? Are we banning Mr. Bean? Are we banning Tom and Jerry? I know they tried to ban Tom and Jerry. They said it was a violent cartoon. It's a slapstick cartoon. Okay. All right, well, that's fiction. I get you. I get your reasoning coming at me already in the comments. I get your reason. That's slapstick. That's fictional. People can misinterpret fiction. But then what about sports? What about UFC? What about MMA? What about boxing? What about rugby? What about American football? All of those things involve levels of violence to the other person. They involve assaulting them in some manner. Granted, it is a consensual manner because they put themselves in that position, but it is violent. So, and at the same time, mosh pits on YouTube? often get struck down, often get banned, often get taken off. A band playing a live show, just trying to demonstrate how good their show is, how enthusiastic their fan base is, how that fan base is just trying to enjoy themselves and connect with one another in a full-on physical manner. Sorry, the hair got a little involved there. You could see I was in moshing mode. But a mosh pit's not about violence, necessarily. Mosh pit's more about connectivity, embracing primitive survival with one another. It's essentially just engaging with one another, and yet those videos get taken down. Now, that's interesting, right? People meeting their physical limits, but I can watch boxing videos on YouTube all the time. If I wanted to. I sometimes do. They're interesting. I have no interest in sport, but they're interesting. It's interesting what humans do to one another. So maybe it's not the violence they have an issue with. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's the monetization they have an issue with. Maybe it's because sports institutes are heavily funded, have sponsorship deals, often pay for advertising, often pay to be on a platform, often pay to get pushed to the front page, perhaps opening live venues and live events, which YouTube will get money for. Perhaps it's that. Perhaps it's because underground and backyard music venues struggle and they cannot afford all of those things, which means YouTube can't make money off them. Maybe it's that. You know? And then how can you ban violence? Because you can't expect violence. Violence is abrupt. It is sudden. So you can't have a video of someone getting beaten up on the street. Non-consensual violence. Non-consensual violence? Yes, you're not allowed that on YouTube either. Non-consensual violence. You can't have that on YouTube. So if someone gets beaten up, their video will get taken down after it's already been up for a little while because they want the clicks and they want the views and they want the traffic going to the website. And they will take that video down. You're not allowed that. Right? However, there's a siren. That's the violence coming for me. Stopped. All right. However, you can host live streams. You can get people on the street doing different things. You know, if you're watching a glamour video, which is posing as a makeup tutorial, and you're sitting there and watching that, and in the background, I'm standing there and someone walks up and slaps me, that's violence. Do you ban that stream straight away? How can you ban that stream? How can you monitor that? How can you keep on top of that? We'll come back to sex on YouTube in a minute, because that's, you know, what I just alluded to. But, you know, we need to redefine that. So violence is okay on YouTube if it has a sponsor. Maybe that's what we're getting at. Maybe that's what I'm getting at. It's okay if you have a sponsor. Sex is okay, but only within the defined perimeters, which are changeable, subject to expectation and cash injection from the stakeholders of YouTube. We should pick something simpler. Something more direct, something straightforward, which has a line in the sand. What can you show on YouTube? Death. Can't show death on YouTube. Number 3. Death. If you're clicking through this video, looking for chapters where each topic is, this is where we hit death. This is. I've said it about 4 times now, so I'm about to be banned any minute now. Can't have death. No deaths. No deaths in the world. World's just a happy place. You're not allowed death on YouTube. Maybe. Fiction might be all right. There's some fiction with death in it may be okay. There's a lot of deaths in fiction, you know. So no real deaths. That maybe that's the line. No real death on YouTube. But what about the news? See, it's gotten complex again. What about the news? The news. I've got this theory. You know, I call it part-time filth. So part-time filth to me is anything which is on a platform which says that thing is banned, but, and breaks the terms of service, or the user and using license agreement, whatever you want to call it, breaks all of that, but is allowed because it can be financially exploited by the platform. So it's part-time filth. It's not full filth. You know, it's like buying milk. You go into the store, you're not getting full filth because you know it's bad for you. You're getting part-time filth, which has had some of the fat skimmed off. You know full filth is what you wanted. You know that was what you were going to the store for. You know it's going to make everything taste better. But you're going to get 2%. You're going to get semi-skimmed. You're going to get the part-time filth. It's like taking a tall friend to the movies. I think this is how the content gets in. It's like taking a tall friend to the movies and letting them walk in first, because you're all 14, but they look 15, and you're all off into like an 18-rated film. And you push your tall friend through. Oh, it's like going to the club. you go to the club and there's a line, and you know they're gonna probably not let you in because maybe you're not in the conventional attractivity state. Maybe you look a little bland. Maybe you've been thrown out of there. That's another good one. You know, maybe you've been previously banned, but now you have a cosign. You have a cosign to get you into the club because your friend has a fancy hat and can distract the barman, so they won't notice. And you get it. That's what part-time filth is, right? That's how I classify part-time filth. It's pre-approval. It is the credit for the digital landscape. The cosigner of the digital landscape is part-time filth. And that's what allows things, you know? That's why we get confused and that's why we get frustrated, because that's what allows things like clickbaiting videos, you know? Clickbait videos with dangerous things in it. 5-minute crafts, which don't work. Misinformation, which is allowed to build, because the platform can monetize them. They can get money from that creator quickly, even if it goes up to like millions of views and then eventually gets taken down. They got the millions of views, they got the people to traffic to their website, and the chances are they probably clicked on something else after watching that original video. You know, it's the same with live streams. Live streams with no actual live streams with no conclusion. You've seen those where they suggest they're going to do something and then they never do the thing. You know, they'll have a big inflatable bubble. I think Ted Nevison covered this. TikTok live streams are an absolute mess. The illusion of violence. You know, someone who's in a perilous situation, but the perilous situation, I can't pronounce words. The perilous situation is not real. It is fabricated. There's a staged environment. Nothing is actually going to happen. The machine they're building is never actually going to work. You know, you put your quarter, you put your penny into the machine, the curtains open, and you're shown the person who is meant to take their clothes off on YouTube, on TikTok, on this live stream, where they're teasing the people and they're getting them all riled up saying, hey, I'm gonna knock over these dominoes. Oh, and it never happens. It just never happens. That's how they get away with it. Because they can see it as, this is generating traffic. This is generating something positive for the website at whole. And then we can charge those people. And then we can take it down. And it's already done the job. It's exploitation. It's exploitation of people who, the people who make these videos as well, just as a shout out to them, generally are in bad situations in their life. Genuinely running out of options. So they're prostrating themselves on these platforms in order to get clicks. There's no sex in the champagne room. When you watch those videos, when you watch clickbait stuff, any of that, there's no sex in the champagne room, guys. You should know that. Violence attack videos are fine on YouTube, but only if it's between the lower classes. If it's against an institution, the video is getting taken down. If it's two unhoused people fighting on the street, that'll stay up for a little bit before it eventually gets taken down, before it gets reported. Before the shareholders have something to say. The funniest thing is that this has happened before, right? This isn't a new phenomena for a platform. This has happened with basically every form of media which has ever existed. They've gone through this period of censorship, and this period of removal, and this period of reintroduction. Television went through it, film went through it, papers went through it, books went through it. Books are kind of undergoing a resurgence of that because people keep trying to ban books. Funny how people don't want you to have information, isn't it? The closest cousin of YouTube is television, always has been, is still going to be, and TV is very well defined. And TV is very well defined because it's an institution which you've never been able to just upload to. You've never been able to have free access to just upload things. You have to go through a system. You have to pay a license fee. There's satellites involved. There's antenna. There's cables. There's all these kinds of things. And there's rules. There's a status quo. There's a hotline for television, which, should you meander, muse, pontificate, deviate from anything which they set out in their original terms and conditions on televisions, you get a phone call, you get a fine. There's a fine to pay. Wait until the laws catch up with social media platforms. And this will happen, by the way. This is going to happen because it is an untapped market. Once the laws catch up with social media and internet and all these things, and things like fines do start to happen more often to platforms which, you know, host this content, they aren't going to pay those fines. What they're going to do is they're going to pass that on to you. So suddenly it becomes, you have an account which is on a platform, congratulations, you have monetized content, congratulations. The current plan is that you have violations, you stop monetizing those videos. That's what they do. They don't want to be seen to be promoting it, they stop monetizing it, they ban you. That's what happens. The future of that is an extra step where it's, we stop monetizing you, we ban you, and then we fine you. Because as soon as their wallet starts to get picked, they're going to pass that damage on to you. And I'm not fear-mongering there. That's just reality. That's how systems work. As soon as the corporation starts to lose financial assets, they pass that on to the employees and the customers and make them pay more. You know, so as Nuance grows, we go from a situation where we had a terms of service and we had four very simple things at the very beginning of this video saying, hey, these are the things which we know and we understand you can't do on your platform. And we adjust them. And we instead go from no sex, no drugs, no violence, no death, to a list which is a lot more devious. It becomes less simplified. It becomes more pick and choose. You know, you can have no sex, but maybe some sex. And then if you do have sex, and it's not the shareholder's view, maybe only family-orientated sex. You know, maybe only couples which are married. Maybe only certain types of marriages. Maybe that's something which they need to discuss with the people who pay the bills. So no porn either, you know. But then, you know, maybe some porn, because some porn makes money. And that's, you know, important to the people over there. So you can't sell sex here, but you can sell something which looks a lot like sex and looks a lot like pornography, but isn't technically, based on the terms which we keep changing. So no, don't do that. But don't do that. You know, and then no violence. But also some violence. Just like little bits of violence every so often, just to keep reminding you. Unless that violence is against branding and that brand happens to, you know, pay some bills and advertising fees. And if they may, you know, potentially advertise with us in the future. So maybe just no big, maybe no corporation brand. No violence against corporation brands. You know, that's fine. But also current events, no. Sure, I mean, maybe. Current events, can we cover current events? Current events are kind of weird. Current events are kind of hyperbolic and volatile in these days and ages. So keep it superficial. You can cover current events, but you can only cover superficial things, you know, celebrities, whatever's on the television, whatever was pre-approved by the organizers of the situation. News is also complex, so, you know, things like suicide rates, self-harm, all of those things, mental deterioration of a society due to misinformation and classist wars. Inequality may lead to unrest. We don't like unrest. Unrest means people don't spend money, and that's a problem for us. So nothing new. Right, nothing particularly new. You can cover the past, but only some of the past, because some of the past upsets some people who happen to still be in charge in any way, shape, or form. We have to be careful about those things. I don't know why I'm getting much more posh. It makes you feel posh when you start putting in these rules. Anyway, nothing new content-wise, please. That's an unwritten rule, but it's right there. You know, you need to feed the algorithm in order to get views. Even the people who have already subscribed to you, even the people who have already been nice enough to follow you and come along for the ride, they're only allowed to know some of the time because you have to feed the algorithm. So you can only make things which we know will be watched, proven things. Basically the model of the dying film industry. So you only make those things and we'll lower the view on other things until you make what we want. Of course, you know, we can't be seen to be behind the trend. So we have to be in front of it. Nothing controversial. If you do happen to go viral for any means for something original and creative, we may take that down after it's fed our algorithm and pushed more people to our site, just for a short period until some celebrity jumps on it and then suddenly becomes validated. Because again, you've got that cosigner, so we might allow you to bring it back. But all of that will have died down because the celebrity will move on to the next thing and your original idea will have been stolen and reproduced by other larger platforms and other larger members of our community who have just repurposed it and removed the check marks from the thumbnail, you know. So you know, all of those things. Same for copyright theft. Same for anything which you put there, you basically lose ownership for. Me just standing in a room. Eventually this will be something somebody else owns. There's no real avoiding that. That's something which I call an artistic statement. Accepting the redundancy of everything I create and put onto any platform. Because the future is bleak. The lesser known Orange slogan. The future is bleak. The future is orange. Nothing controversial, of course, but we won't tell you what we deem controversial, because what we deem controversial changes day to day, and it makes us look a little uncomfortable. It's a little embarrassing if we have to deem what is controversial. And of course, we can't make any clear, firm statement on what we find controversial, because we might upset people who may want to buy advertising from us in the future. And of course, make shorts. Don't make shorts. Make some music. Don't make music. Show us your face. Maybe don't show us your face. We're not a big fan of your face. Roll over. Sacrifice your closest living relative to the CEO of YouTube, Neil Mohan. And then roll over and pour Angel Delight over a parakeet. And then maybe, just maybe, we'll let you have those views that you want. Oh, and don't forget to breathe. But maybe not for too long. It's expensive. So now what? Now what, Graham? Standing there in your room, pontificating on this subject, what happens next? What is the solution to all this? You've just laid out the groundwork. You've relayed out the problem. You've laid out that the situation is semi-dire. Now what? Truth is, I don't really have an answer. It's just, that's the fact of the matter. I don't have an answer on how to solve this. I guess at most I have a point to this. The point being that we've proven that mass banning and mass censorship of content just doesn't work, right? Because it never really has the expectation and reaction which they want it to. If you've ever lived for a while, you may have heard of Mary Whitehouse. Now, she proved this, bless her soul, if she has one. Mary Whitehouse is a former teacher turned activist. I'm not entirely sure if she's still alive. She may be still alive. But she became a activist and cultural despot, is the way I would describe her. She's very much Thatcherite. She's very much part of that era. Because her activism came from rampant conservatism. If you're in the UK, she was essentially the 70s Nadine Dorries. If you're in the US, Nadine Dorries was the person put in charge of culture under Boris Johnson, and the person who went to a deposition of board members to ask them to cut funding for Channel 4 because she didn't agree with their content. However, Channel 4 receives no funding from the UK government, because it is a private enterprise which is paid for by advertising. And that is the person who is in charge of managing all of those things. So you can tell she was really doing a bang-up job. But Mary Whitehouse was like that, but she was shrewd. She was actually kind of clever with it. She had a really direct point, and she had very much clear, defined lines on what she wanted to achieve. She started mail campaigns, she started television interviews, she got into newspapers, she got a big cultural following, and it helped because Margaret Thatcher was in power at the time, who agreed with a lot of her views and values. And that was the way she went about it. But TV and film suffered from it. They suffered from the changes which were made. Censorship became big in films. Films were edited. Films were sometimes edited in ways which made them worse, but they were edited that way. And I mean worse as in consent, not like contextually worse for the story. They made them more violent by making harsh cuts and harsh edits, but the edits allowed them to meet the criteria which was required by the platform. You see what I'm getting at here? And it created this weird brutality to content. And also, it encouraged people to go down means which weren't legitimate, right? And instead ended up with unscrupulous parties being able to exploit people once again. If you wanted to get something made, if you wanted to see a certain type of content, something which was perhaps counterculture, you were suddenly no longer able to walk into a situation where everything had been legitimized and everything was going to be okay. Instead, you were buying VHSs out of the boots of cars and from random dodgy guys and news agents, and you weren't knowing what you were putting into the machines, and you weren't knowing what you were actually going to get or how the film was made in the first place. And it also led to just restriction of good social information. There's this whole thing about Mary Whitehouse. She was a sex education teacher, which is obviously, she's extremely conservative, which to her, sex was a taboo subject. It wasn't something you should be informed on. It wasn't something you should have any knowledge of, which then led to bad sexual education. And once you have bad sexual education, you end up in a situation where teenage pregnancy occurs more often, STDs become on the rise, rape, assault, all of these things grow because you are censoring information which is valuable to the society at hand. What she did, she forced people to find other means to spread the word, an unfiltered means, a uncontrolled means. So, there was a positive in the end of it, that music developed, culture developed, physical media, copying developed, all of these things to get around it, because people were so fed up of being exploited and they were so fed up with the restrictions which were placed on them. And things grew up and they exploded. You got a lot of great artistic merit out of it. And that'll happen again with social media. You see it happening again. You see people returning to physical media, physical means. Zines have become a bigger thing recently in the last few years. I mean, I'm part of that culture anyway, but they're on the rise again. Vinyl came back. Who would have predicted vinyl would come back? But having that connection at shows was just hugely important to people, and getting something they can hang on their wall moved away from the digital era of just a playlist of lists. And of course, you don't own most of the content you buy now if you buy it digitally. And that's a big problem for people, and it's going to change things, and social media will change things further once again, because we're no longer in a stage where you rip a CD and hand it off to a friend. You're in a stage where you download a random torrent and you don't know what you're downloading on your computer. I grew up in the 2000s. We downloaded a lot of dodgy shit, a lot of stuff we shouldn't have been downloading. I've seen things and had things in my computer which were not necessarily good for my computer or my mental health. But I've seen them, and I have moved through them, and I have learned from them, and I educated myself from other sources as well as what I was getting. It's already changing language. I recently moved on to TikTok just as a way of, you know, getting more focus on the art which I was creating, and the language use on TikTok is fascinating. The kids have adjusted themselves so quickly, and people have adjusted their language so quickly. They say, you know, non-aliving. People are being non-alived over in different countries, guys. People are being non-alived. You can't say dead. You can't say suicide. You can't say self-harm. If you can't say topics like this because of fear of being banned, what does that mean for spreading information about it, which is actually useful to people, right? It also leads to homogenization of work. People who originally had great, fantastic ideas, taking their counterculture, counter-mainstream idea, and then cramming it into something mainstream. Because if they don't, they know they're not going to get the click-through. They're not going to get what they need. They're not going to get the item which is allowing them to become a full-time paid artist, because they start making things which are on demand. I have no doubt a lot of these people who make a lot of the clicking stuff you see, a lot of the general bland stuff which you hear, the lo-fi and all this kind of stuff, have original, passionate ideas and are creative people, but they're being forced into a pigeonhole. It was the same with YouTube, and it still is the same with YouTube. The vloggers, video creators, adjust their content to meet what the algorithm pushes. And you may say that that's moving with the cultural times, but I would say that the cultural times are now in such a state where people are no longer setting the trend. They're having to adhere to the trend on a regular basis, and not giving them time to mature within the medium, because they simply don't have time, and they get worried that as soon as they change to something which isn't the trend, they're going to lose subscribers, they're going to lose money, they know they're going to be able to survive, and they don't know what they'll be able to do in that situation. They've taken something which was meant to make the platform safer, more user-friendly, and more engaging, so you weren't exposed to a lot of bad stuff. And instead, it's now like the sword of Damocles of the virtual space. Because if you start using it as your means of getting paid and making a living, which a lot of people do, but you don't know if you'll get banned, you have no choice. You have to blend your work. You have to stick to the pre-approved topics. Because when you're on the breadline, and it becomes your breadline, you lose the decision of choice. You lose the freedom which was originally meant to be the intent. And what also that does, I mentioned it before briefly, is that it stunts society's growth. You know, I touched on it before. You can discuss the news. Can you discuss the news? Who knows at this point, right? Personal, health, information, suicide, alcohol, drugs, all of these topics are important to society. All of these topics have subsets of society where people struggle with all of these issues. If they can't go to a good safe space to get good information about that, or even find out where they can go from there to get good information about that, they're not going to be able to get out of those situations. They're not going to get the information where they're going to go. They're going to go back to a period of time where it's going to be word on the street, where you're going to get unregulated advice, unsolicited advice a lot of the time, from various people, blogs, family members, people who are in the same situation of you but don't believe it's a problem. You have to be able to discuss these topics. You have to be able to discuss the bad things in the world and the world around us in order to learn from those mistakes. As soon as you start putting blanket moderation on everything, which is even related to those things, it damages the progression of society. We need to be exposed to a multitude of opinions and information so we can continue to root and develop our cognitive skills so we know how to pick the best information. You can put out a million life hacks, but only a few of those will work, right? And as a society, as a culture, we'll get together and we will discuss those hacks. And we'll take on board the ones which work, and the ones which don't work will just fall to the wayside. And the same is said for information on how to deal with the darker side of life. Now just replace the word life hack with instructional health, informative information on taxes, and you'll see the root of what I'm getting at here. If you don't discuss the hard topics, you don't have discourse around these subjects, you end up with a society which lacks progression and ends up just eating itself alive. And don't get me wrong, right? I'm not a person who looks at the world today and says, oh, too many things are getting cancelled. These kids are too sensitive. They don't know how to deal with any of this. No, I'm a person who looks at the world and goes, we dealt with a lot of stuff we shouldn't have had to deal with. And the reason we had to deal with that and dealt with a lot of that stuff was hampered by the fact that information wasn't readily available to us. It's hard to know you're in a bad situation when you're in that bad situation sometimes, because that bad situation's been normalized. This is a lesson television learned. This is a lesson which film learned. They create spaces, they create structure, they create a format which allows all of these things to exist within the same medium and pushed it out into the world. They developed it over time. It took time. And social media content platforms will do exactly the same. So did I find 7 things which will get you banned on YouTube? Sure. I feel like I also found 15 things which would get you banned on YouTube. But also maybe not banned, because that may change day to day. So what can you do on YouTube? That's a question. This video is an interesting one. I've covered a lot of dark topics. I've not done any of those topics. I've not performed violence, sexual acts on this channel. I haven't discussed suicide in depth. I haven't discussed alcohol abuse in depth. But this video is all about those topics. So will it remain? Who knows? If it gets taken down, it just proves my point, right? Because it doesn't seem like a question of if people will get banned on YouTube, or if someone will get banned on Instagram, or if Facebook will take you down. No. It seems like it's a question of when. And that's the topic of the day. Thanks for coming along for the ride. I'll talk to you guys later.